from Clearview Court on the destruction of rent control controversy. Stay tuned.
Praise boss when morning work bells chime.
Praise boss when morning work bells chime.
Praise him for bits of overtime.
Praise him for bits of overtime.
Praise him whose wars we love to fight.
Working for that minimum wage and wondering whatever happened to the 8-hour day. Oh, whatever happened to the 8-hour day? Can't feed a family now on one person's pay. I can't take much more, I just got one thing to say. Whatever happened to the 8-hour day? We got no time for the house, no time for the kids. This 80-hour week has put our lives on the skids. There's only one thing gonna take it away. We gotta bring back that 8-hour day. Oh, whatever happened to the 8-hour day? Can't feed a family now on one person's pay. I can't take much more, I just got one thing to say. Whatever happened to the 8-hour day? Oh, the company keeps telling us that we want too much. I see most of them still got that Midas touch. Now all we ever wanted was a home of our own. Instead we're gonna bail out some savings and loans. The kids need attention, the house is a mess. Our marriage is buckling from all of this stress. I can't take much more, I just got one thing to say. Whatever happened to the 8-hour day? Oh, whatever happened to the 8-hour day? Can't feed a family now on one person's pay. I can't take much more, I just got one thing to say. Whatever happened to the 8-hour day? Whatever happened to the 8-hour day? Whatever happened to the 8-hour day?
Thank you. I couldn't really close out tonight without singing this song that has come to mean so much to me, because I have seen courage and idealism and everything. You know, when they give you all this talk in school about what this country's supposed to be, about caring for each other and standing up for each other and one out of many and working together and liberty and justice for all, we know that our history has not served those ideals very well. But in Decatur, Illinois, that liturgy is being borne witness to every day by some of the most courageous, exciting, wonderful workers that it's been my privilege to know, and that is the workers at the A.E. Staley plant. If you've all been to Decatur, like you said, you've heard it already. Deadly corn. It's a war zone here today, right in the heartland. But our union's here to stay. These multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. But they've declared a war on us, but back it's up to you all. There's a war on the workers.
There's a war on the workers.
There's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. Deadly corn could be the
death of you and me, we're not unarmed. Our weapon's solidarity. Each workday's been a battle in the toxics and the smell. It was bad enough with Staley, but with Tate and Lyle, it's hell out there. It's a war on the workers.
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 Oh, it's a war on the workers, and it's time we started calling the shots. Deadly corn. Workplace safety's just a joke. There's the dust, the BSS, asbestos, fire and smoke. Jim Beals was murdered outright, poisoned by P.O. But Tate and Lyle's philosophy is die quickly or die slow. It's a war on the workers.
It's a war on the workers.
It's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. Concept. It's a war on the workers, or it's a war on the workers. They might ask for copay, but you know what I say?
It's a war on the workers.
They call for privatization.
It's a war on the workers.
And cooperation.
It's a war on the workers.
It's a war on the workers. It's a war at the Frontier Casino. It's a war at Firestone here in Decatur. It's a war at the A.E. Staley plant. Thanks to GATT and NAFTA, it's a worldwide war. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
From Ann Feeney's Heartland, Praise Boss, Whatever Happened to the 8-Hour Day, and, of course, War on the Workers. You can get her cassette if you probably go online and look for Ann Feeney, A-N-N-E-F-E-E-N-E-Y, Ann Feeney. I'm Robert Norse, and this is Free Radio Santa Cruz's Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Twice a week, Sunday, we have the long show. That's today, March 7th, 2004. Glad you could join us. And please feel free to call in. The call-in number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC, area code 831, if you're out of it, out of the area, that is, not out of it, out of the, perhaps the Santa Cruz zone, 831-427-3772. You can also email me at rnorse2, all small letters, number 2, at hotmail.com. I'll try and answer questions. And there's only one phone line in here, but I'll be watching the board and hoping we can pick you up if you decide you want to call in. The show covers local stuff, although I've also got interest in other issues, and I'll be bringing that in today. We're hoping to have some folks from Clearview Court call in, though the arrangements we made yesterday, I should say that I made, were late, and so we may not have may not come until another later time. There's actually a council meeting coming up on Tuesday. At the 3 o'clock session of the Santa Cruz City Council, there is an emergency bill coming up, emergency ordinance, which affects Clearview Court. And I can't tell you what it is because the city clerk wouldn't tell me, or couldn't tell me, because it's a, quote, emergency ordinance, meaning that they'll be giving emergency findings and giving us, the public, the text of the ordinance when we get to City Council Tuesday at 3 in the afternoon, for those of us who aren't working and can show up at that rather unusual time. It's course, not a very good time for people who are working to be able to participate in the public process, though participation at city council is always problematic and is usually limited to 3 or 2 minutes of public comment at a microphone, which is usually ignored by the city council unless it meets their prefabricated opinions, their pre-decided perspective, what they intend to do anyway. And really, the person to go to find out what they intend to do is to go to the staff, because they almost invariably accept staff recommendations. Almost invariably, not always, of course. If enough people show up, or if a council member is sufficiently feeling his or her oats, they will make an exception. But it's generally the staff and Dick Wilson, city manager for life, that run this city until such time as the voters decide it's time to change things. And the way to change them, of course, is not necessarily by changing city council members, though I guess that's the immediate mechanism, but by getting perhaps a change in the system of government here, perhaps some kind of mass protest so that city council members once elected do not suddenly turn into subservient minions of the staff, eager to do what they want and in each situation, following the city attorney's advice, following the city manager's priorities, as seems to have been the case for the last, I don't know, decade and a half when I've been here. You have the, what do you call it, corrupting or co-opting or disintegration or the betrayal of commitments made to the public by city council contenders who were successful and then went the way of the Wilson, so to speak. Anyway, hopefully coming up, we'll have Joe Williams, who's the Peace and Freedom Party party's candidate for the congressional district that Representative Farr is currently holding. He's quite interested in Haiti, and Joe's also involved, as regular listeners know, in street performing. He's a performer himself, and every Wednesday, along with other performers, joins the Safe Sing-Along, or Strum-Along, or Sip-Along, if you like to sip the soup that comes with the event, in front of New Leaf Market, still going on. The sixth Safe event is going to happen next Wednesday, and it happened every Wednesday thereafter, until such time as people get tired of it. Police have been substantially and appropriately respectful of the event generally, and they've kept an eye on it from a distance, but not moved to interfere in any substantive way or threaten tickets and so forth, and so that's good. If they only adopted the same posture toward other street performers, of course, it would be good, but we have street performers with tickets going to court. Mike has a ticket for leaving unattended property as he crossed the street in front of the coffee roasting company. Moo has 2 tickets for playing within 10 feet of a building by CSO Pam Bechtel, and the harassment continues unabated, of course, of young and poor people in front of Borders and elsewhere that the city is using a variety of means to try to drive away from the downtown, including such things as setting up a change-making machine at a strategic spot where the entire 50-foot area in either direction then becomes a forbidden zone as far as sitting, having a political table, or performing goes. You may have remember, if you heard the last show, Jenny, a local activist who, sometimes street person, got her first ticket for sitting down next to a bench because she has a kind of a disability that requires her to sit, and there was no space on the benches, and she wanted to be with her friends, so she sat down next to the bench, and that, of course, was within 50 feet of the ATM, which was placed there in front of Borders specifically so that people would be discouraged from collecting there in a social scene, just as they've been discouraged from being in front of the Pacific Cookie Company a year and a half ago by having the benches removed, and 2 years ago been discouraged by having the area between Sushi Now and Alibaba's Cafe, now Alfresco's and Cafe Campesino, in front of New Leaf Market, fenced off and privatized. This is all part of a general response to merchant sensibility of some merchants that want to have the city a different kind of Santa Cruz than it's traditionally been, and want to invite and make it an inviting place for those who are the considerably more conservative, one might even say more reactionary bent. With a money-minded city council that's prepared to build box stores and fund developments on the west side that are causing alarm even in yuppie residential circles, you can see that it's going to be hard days ahead for the folks downtown. If you want to comment on any of this, you can call in 427-3772. I'm going to be kind of repeating this number throughout the day for those who haven't been listening, who've just tuned in. And you are perhaps listening to this station on 96.3 FM or 101.1 FM if you're further south in the county, or possibly you're listening to it on the computer at www.freakradio.org. Also, we're going to have a call from Wiley Drake. Wiley's a very conservative Republican minister of the First Baptist Church of Buena Park, I believe it's called. Never get the name right, but I think that's what it is. He is famous or notorious in some circles for putting up homeless people in his church, even when the good liberals of Buena Park don't want that to happen. And he's been convicted of it and of misdemeanors, three misdemeanors, and the judge essentially gave him community service, and he just continues to do it. He's going to call in and talk about some the death of a homeless woman. That'll be around noon, and I invite you to listen in for that. I think what I'm going to play now is a bit, perhaps a bit repetitive, but it's going to. I'm trying to encourage you folks in Clearview Court who may be listening to give a call in and give me some updates if you have them, or just some thoughts if you don't have a lot of totally clear picture of what's happening. This is the city council tape that it took me a week to get. It actually was partially my fault, although this was such a short city council meeting. The last Tuesday's meeting was only, the relevant part of it was only about an hour and a half long, and I thought that the city could quickly make a tape for last Thursday's show. They couldn't. Actually, it was a week ago Thursday that I was looking for it, and I finally got the tape last week, and this is the tape of the city council meeting on Tuesday in, I guess, late February, where many people from Clearview Court, one of the two, well, the three mobile home parks in Santa Cruz, but all of them supposedly under rent control until they were destroyed. Well, El Rio is run by the actual tenants, if I've got the name properly. The other two, De Anza Senior Mobile Home Park, was sold out by the Kennedy-Rotkin Combine and their own board, headed by, I guess, Sterling Frost, where they got the signatures for a referendum to push back the city council's sellout to this huge this MHC corporation, but they decided not to turn them in. And now there's, of course, I guess they could push for a second referendum and change it, but they aren't doing that. Now the people in Clearview Court are being threatened with a kind of fallout from the whole thing as the city abandons rent control for those trailer parks that had supposedly been guaranteed rent control in perpetuity, irrevocably, et cetera, et cetera. And we have people like Scott Kennedy publicly lying to the community about this issue, and in the most kind of arrogant and presumptuous way, on the front pages of the Santa Cruz Sentinel, when essentially, not a particularly harsh critic, Heather Berner, does a story on Clearview Court talking about how one tenant has going to have to leave and drag her trailer out of there because she can't afford to pay the tripled rents that are going to come up when half the people who are either lied to about rent control by the previous owner or didn't get the proper information from the city or for other reasons were unable to use it are going to be pushed out when this new lease goes in. Again, fallout from the MHC a victory that Kennedy and Rotkin bent over for, as well as the rest of the council except for Ed Porter. And even those who are actually on rent control at Clearview Court, real rent control, will have that rent control yanked out from under them, just like De Anza. They will get a 38-year lease or something, at least that's what's being talked about, where there will be the shadow of rent control will be in effect, but if they try to transfer it to a relative or if they want to sell their home or move, they will be told the rents will revert to the market rate 3 to 5 times as much. And that, of course, makes the homes difficult, if not impossible, to sell and certainly make worthless for their relatives. Of course, it does, however, set up a nice situation for those who are planning to do other things with the property. And that was pointed out in Saturday's Chronicle. I just said Chronicle Sentinel. We got an incoming call, though. Let's see what the caller has to say. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, Robert, this is John.
Hey, John.
I sent you an email. I don't know if it got to you or not, because I tried sending it to you again from your Hotmail account, and it said you're over the storage limit.
I see. I got parts 1, 2, 3, and 6.
Well, it should be parts 1 through 9.
My goodness. That's quite a long email. Yeah, I don't think anything more got to it because we've reached critical storage here. For those listening in, folks, this is the techie side of it all. You're learning how we struggle to get our technical stuff together, at least I do. Thanks for sending what you sent, John.
Yeah, I'll try sending it again in a little while. I got the whole email in your Hotmail account that I could just send off to you, but you need to delete some more stuff first.
Okay, we'll see what I can do.
And I was kind of hoping to hear Richard Oxman call in today because I was kind of hoping to be interesting to hear his response to our claim that he didn't allow freedom of speech at his One Dance Summit, that there was some problems with that. You know, he wanted to orchestrate the event in very particular ways. And
right, yeah, I know that you yourself...
Can you talk up? I can barely hear you.
Yeah, you yourself had a particular concern with that. You were approached by Richard at the event.
Yeah, I was told to either stand outside or not hand out those flyers today or whatever. But anyway, at least he's giving a response, unlike the Medea Benjamin of the Green Festival, who didn't even give me a response.
So you also
question about why she had me why they had me excluded from their event.
Well, you sound
doing the same thing.
So what were you doing? Were these flyers about, you know, murdering children, advice on how to rape vulnerable women?
No, it was just about my website, pagesincolor.com, and the alternative links portal that I'm starting up.
Well, could it be that this is a commercial venture that they felt was inappropriate to the nonprofit tone of the event?
Well, it's kind of a hybrid. It's a little bit of a commercial venture, a little bit of a non-commercial venture. You know, it mostly has links to all these different alternative media web pages.
Well, I know that I mentioned
advertising for different things, but
I know that I mentioned I was actually praising Richard on the last show. Richard Oxman is a writer and an activist who, for those who don't know, organized with his wife Sylvie the One Dance Summit, a gathering of folks from different areas of radical thought. And then was very of great assistance in bringing those people down to city council to speak out against the sleeping ban because of Mayor Kennedy's contrived agenda that day. They were not able to even give a public comment, much less address an agenda item that was relevant around the sleeping ban because Kennedy refused to put it on the agenda. So my hat's off to Richard for doing that, and my thanks are out to him. But there were problems, and I was quite candid about that, too, that he repeatedly did tell people that he pressured them not to flyer, and I think he directed people to who he had previously offered space for to go outside. And even though there was space, I think he was rather anxious about the event, and understandably it was somewhat underattended, but still appreciated by those who went there. And since that event, I know I was surprised and pleased to see his writing on the Counterpunch website. And I'm not going to withhold my criticism for what I feel is appropriate at the One Dance Summit, but I'm also not going to withhold my praise. So have you read his stuff on the Counterpunch website?
Yeah, I think I've read some of it.
What do you think?
Well, I don't know if it was a Counterpunch website or whether it was the other one. The can't remember what website that was.
The only one I read is the Counterpunch website. But I enjoyed it a lot. And I guess I kind of like his tone, which perhaps the reason that I like it is I have a similar kind of unsparing, often sarcastic, and I believe activist-oriented tone. And I appreciated what Richard, I think, was trying to do, which is to get people nationwide and get activists together to actually do something in the month of April that was more than simply sending in a postcard or a sort of a pro forma protest. I don't know how far that's gotten, and he's going to be invited to speak on it today if he wants to call in.
Yeah.
So yeah, I echo your. I mean, I second your request. I don't know if he's going to call, and he I think there were some communications between him and my producer, and we'll see if he decides to give a call.
Yeah. Okay.
All righty.
I'll talk to you later.
Hey, thank you. And the phone number for anyone else again is 427-3772. The headlines for Saturday in the Santa Cruz Sentinel were big plans for beachside hotel rebuild. The price tag could reach $88 million. The city council will consider Tuesday whether to move forward with an $88 million proposal to rip down the Coast Santa Cruz Hotel and replace it with a 268-room hotel and conference center. That money includes $61 million in demolition and construction costs and $27 million to pay off the debt on the property, which is home to the 163-room hotel formerly known as the Dream Inn. That was a Dan White story, top of the fold. The features were revealed in a feasibility study released Friday. It's a huge study. It's sitting in the library by Jones Lang LaSalle, a real estate services and investment management firm. We have a call. Let me just say briefly before I answer that call and keep ringing their caller. The issue here is, what about the rumors that this whole destruction of rent control is an attempt to eminent domain and relocate and essentially disperse people at Clearview Court, which is not being discussed. And it isn't mentioned at all by Dan White. It doesn't seem to catch the bigger picture. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello?
Hi, Robert. It's Richard. Hi.
Hey, Richard. Welcome to Free Radio.
Thank you, Robert.
Yeah, how you doing today?
Doing fine, and thanks for all the work you're doing.
Hey. Ditto.
Yeah, are we on the air?
We are on the air.
Okay, so, yeah, a couple of things. I didn't listen to everything that you, you know, that you said this morning or previously. I just tuned in for a very short period of time both times.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a couple of things I want to address. One is the you were talking. I heard you talking about websites, right? Not just for my articles, of course, but there's a really a wonderful site called pressaction.com.
Uh-huh.
That has a lot of wonderful stuff by Mickey Z, who was the MC at One Dance.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot of my stuff. There's another website, which is www. Why do people have to repeat that triple W?
Yeah, that's okay.
A Dissident Voice. D-I-S-S-I-D-E-N-T, voice, mm-hmm. .org.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a lot of great stuff, too. It also happens, since I want to speak about some of the stuff I've written, a piece that none of the other websites posted, which is called What to Do, that's a question mark.
Mm-hmm.
Violence Reconsidered is the subtitle.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it's not a plea for violence by any means, but it's trying to deal with the liberals' protestations about violence versus nonviolence in a different light. You know, interjecting some information about Gandhi that people don't usually talk about. And anyway, that's on dissonantvoice.org, and most of my stuff is on pressaction.com, and then. By the way, on Counterpunch, I expect them to post, I'm going to send something out today, what I consider a really a major statement called The Coming Coming Uncivil War, which I'm going to try to get all these sites to post tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. You want to give us a preview of
that? Give feedback on your show and email me if they like at mail at onedancesummit.org.
Sure. Richard?
By the way, again, thanks, Robert, for all the great stuff you've been doing over years and years, you know, under great stress for local people in the community. You deserve a lot of applause for that. Whatever anyone has to say, you know, by way of criticizing you, you should be applauded for being on the street, you know, taking the punches with the people who are homeless and advocating endlessly.
Well, I appreciate that, Richard. I also think that it's appropriate to criticize me, too, and I don't mind it. I mean, whether I mind it or not, it's also appropriate if you got, you know, reservations,
yeah.
Criticisms. You know, if you disagree with what I say, as you did Thursday, you have a perfect right, and indeed, I welcome that kind of discussion, because I think it's by that we, you know, we air and resolve some of these issues that people go off into their own private groups, and they fester about it, you know, it's just not...
Yeah, one of the things... did I cut you off?
Still here.
Yeah. One of the things that is a problem on the left, you know, nationally, internationally, but certainly in this country, is people on the left people in general, you know, try to avoid so much of some confrontation. And when there are legitimate bases, you know, for criticism, they should be on the table. People should go back and forth, as unpleasant as it's going to be at times, as much as it might undermine someone's agenda for the day. You know, everyone's in a rush to get their thing done. Eventually, the confrontations have to take place. And that's a really, really big problem, that whether it's bigwigs, you know, like Parenti and McKinney, or small potatoes like some of the people who are lesser known, who appeared, like Eve Engler, you know, at the One Dance,
mm-hmm.
Two of one almost. When push comes to shove, they don't want it on the table. They want to just expect you to either eat, you know, what they're saying, politely or otherwise, you know,
mm-hmm.
or just ignore it, you know, completely.
Yeah, and maybe apropos of that, we should try to get out of the way first. It's up to you, but perhaps the concerns that you had, I mentioned in passing, and that John earlier mentioned when, I guess you probably heard him and I talking on the air.
Wait, let me switch ears just a
second. Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, you heard the previous caller speaking on the air.
Yeah, I did catch part of it. I did want to say something about that.
Uh-huh, sure.
And cut me off if I'm going on too long, but the one of the things that people, even people who, when we finally came to town, were working with us, you know, to help us,
uh-huh.
Really don't understand that, you know, there aren't too many people. I just want to put this into context before I counter what was said that I heard.
Sure.
Very few people, whether they're activists or not, have been involved in what Sylvie and I were involved with for over a year. We worked over 24, you know, 24/8 for over a year. Very few people, as active as they may be, work on a project, you know, like working on a novel every day with, you know, eyes on the prize, very, very distant, you know, and sustain that energy and that output over a year. They work on little projects here and there, and little, you know, events here and there, but this is a single project that we focused on for over a year. It was originally slated for Salt Lake City, as most, I hope a lot of people know by now, and only at the 23rd hour did it get switched to Santa Cruz. And that's a whole interesting story itself, by the way, which I hope people will read about. I wrote an article about it called Levitt and the Utahnization of America, which has to do with the pollution in Salt Lake City, which was the main cause, contrary to what the Sentinel said, main cause for us relocating the event to Santa Cruz. That's on pressaction.com. Mm-hmm. But because we didn't come to Santa Cruz until the 23rd hour, we got in touch with local groups here at the very, very last minute, so to speak. And in doing so, we quickly accumulated a host of requests for space and so on. I want to remind people who would criticize us that although the criticism's always welcome, you know, it should be given in the context of, we put on an event, if I may say so, which is a real rarity on a number of counts, not the least of which is the fact that nothing was charged. Mm-hmm. If people didn't want to pay, they didn't have to pay, to whether it was to attend or to table. The problem that comes up with this criticism that, you know, it was just aired, which I've heard before, is that people are not acknowledging the fact that we had a list of people who wanted space and who wanted to do this or that, whether it's flyers, whatever, long before they ever approached me. In some cases, I had to deal, aside from that list, I had to deal with the fact of people being over the top in terms of personality or in terms of what they were handing out or in terms of it being, like you were touching upon, commercial rather than nonprofit nature.
Mm-hmm.
There were a number of different variables that had to be considered when I said yes or no to someone. Including the prima donna quality of some of the other people who were tabling, who I had to cater to some degree because of long-standing relationships that built up over the year and promises that were made long before we ever even got to Santa Cruz, so, you know, in terms of space considerations, mm-hmm. And crowding and all that. But I mean, there's a number of variables that people are not intimately connected with the event, which is probably limited to two people, like me and Sylvie, wouldn't understand. And I want to publicly, you know, right or wrong is not important here. I want to publicly apologize to any hurt feelings or any misunderstandings or whatever. But I can assure you, it has zero. All of that had zero to do with not being concerned with the civil rights of local people, you know. It had everything to do with, A, having to handle the whole, I mean, every aspect, me and Sylvie, ourselves, virtually, and having to make quick decisions, you know, on the spot, and not having time to go into the niceties and nuances of why we were doing this or that, and when people were being resistant to, you know, me asking them this or that, to do this, requesting, you know, having to just make a decision, put my foot down, so to speak, and then move on to the next thing on the agenda. So, you know, having said that, I hope that people understand that things were a lot more complicated, to say the least, than what might have met the eye. And I think, if I may say so, just in closing on this note, mm-hmm. just the fact that we did this all out of our own pockets, of our own efforts, you know, over the year, virtually, with very little help till the very last minute, charging nothing. Everything was on a donation basis if people wanted to, if they could. That should help people, you know, accept what came down for them personally.
You know, I think, for those who don't know, I'm talking with Richard Oxman, who, with Sylvie, his wife, and a very...
Yes, small... And by the way, thank you for mentioning her. You're one of the few people, Robert, who made it a point to include her, you know, when you would talk about me. A lot of people, that gets lost in the shuffle, and I'm really, really appreciative of the fact that you're on that, you know?
Sure. Maybe I should say Sylvie, with the help of Richard Oxman, was able to put on this event. And, you know... I've already said that I was, you know, you showed up at a Huff meeting, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, and you expressed great interest in doing something locally that would show that you weren't just a bunch of talking heads on the hill, so to speak, but you wanted to really do something real that would have some kind of resonance in this community and send a message to folks who want to, you know, chatter but not act, or maybe only act in a very limited kinds of ways within very narrow realms that... We're trying to get to broader and deeper issues, and not afraid to challenge them locally. Am I accurate in putting it that way?
Yeah, I'm having a little, because my ears, my aging, my ears in this particular phone I'm using is a little good. But I think I heard everything you said. I think that's right on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was very impressed that you got Michael Parenti there. Of course, it so enraged Scott Kennedy that later he had me arrested. But that's fine. I think he shows his colors, and I'm glad Michael. Although he was essentially gagged from speaking, he's a writer whose his most recent book is, I guess, The Assassination of Julius Caesar.
Right.
But, you know, and I'm going to continue to be working on that sleeping band stuff, and I know for years you yourself have been a supporter of ending those kinds of laws against the poor.
Oh, yes, yeah.
You know, I had criticisms of what happened at the One Dance Summit, how it was run. I wrote off a lot of it later to the fact that you were under a lot of pressure. You had to do 78 things at the same time, make a lot of decisions. I find it awkward and uncomfortable to bring these criticisms forward because, first of all, you're not running these events every week. You don't have a policy of telling people to fly or outside or move their tables or anything. It happened in the thick of the event. So, I mean, I'm sensitive to this kind of stuff because just a week or two later, I was at the Martin Luther King Day deal, and they tried to move me outside for flyering indoors, and I was giving out flyers about Martin Luther King and human rights, and I told them no way, call the cops, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I want you to understand that when I said something similar to you at that event, and you didn't call the cops, that's not your way. You you expressed some resentment and some concern.
Not the cops, not me.
No, you didn't do that. But you know, we definitely had a difference of opinion at that point. You know, so. You know, it's a sensitive point with me when it comes up anywhere, and I feel much as I do commend you for the good work you do, and will continue to. I had to say something at that point, and I had to, you know, and I...
It's welcome, Robert, it's welcome. I want to put it to bed because I have, like, even now in the air, I have some other stuff I want to share with you in the public that I hope a lot of people listen to today, because this is, I think, stuff that, you know, positive stuff that we can jump on together.
Sure. Before you do, let me ask just to follow up on the One Dance Summit situation. You brought that event together in the hopes of getting an action going, and I was trying to encourage you at some point to sort of, you got some not much discussion of that particular action at the event that I heard, though I didn't hear all the speakers. Has there been any forward movement on that? Where's that at now? Because that seems to me to be a very important thing you're trying to do.
I'm glad you're asking that. That's actually, I wouldn't say more important, but it certainly is equally as important as what I was going to, you know, bring up, which I'd like to get to in a little bit, but this is really important what you're bringing up. This business about having, well over a year ago, got the idea that, you know, what we need in the country is, instead of all these activists, well-meaning activists and effective activists in a lot of different instances, doing this or that in their particular corner. I happened to have a chance to mention this during a Q&A following a Parenti speech, following a McKinney speech at the One Dance. What we need is what has always been needed in a given country in modern times to affect change, and that's a movement in solidarity across all sorts of lines, of forcing change on the streets, you know, civil disobedience, etc. I was very, very much wanting One Dance to be a vehicle for that, you know, to culminate in strategizing about how we could get various groups across the nation to move in solidarity. And the idea was, okay, let's this is just quite done arbitrarily. We were Sylvie and I were both open totally to changing the dates, all kinds of considerations we were open to. But just have something to start with. We thought, okay, April 15th, on tax day, we'll propose that we tax the government. We'll have people show up, not in Washington, D.C., where they have to travel or spend money, or San Francisco, where they have to go away from home, but at their local post offices across the country, just show up, and they would be showing up not just to, you know, say they want Bush out, but to be in support of certain demands of the federal government, no matter who might be in office. You know, things like, just to pick from the top of my head here, like, you know, abolishment of the death penalty, okay, like that, you know, that abomination, you know, would I expect to be on the list, okay? But these were supposed to be demands that we're going to derive over the internet and in person at One Dance. You know, we're going to come up with these list of demands that we were going to present to the federal government nationwide at the local post offices. People could go. If they were on vacation, if they had to work during the week, we had scheduled for the Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, you know, 15th, 16th, and 17th, local post offices, just volumes of people showing up, right? Okay. To make a long story short, with all this in mind, you know, the best intentions on our part, we apparently, and I say this without all, you know, due respect to, I have enormous respect for Michael Parenti on so many counts, enormous respect for Cynthia McKinney on so many counts, and so on. But the first night, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Yeah. On the first night, we were very, very tightly packed, you know, for speakers. I feel I had an opportunity to get up to speak myself, really. But in during the Q&A period, I got up and I threw out this idea that I'm mentioning now. And Parenti's response, my idea initially was, if people get arrested, you know, we'll have a head count across the country of how many people aren't going to take it any longer. You know, this would be a head count and arrest record that the authorities couldn't, where they couldn't fudge the statistics, they couldn't spin the statistics, right? Mm-hmm. The figures. And I said that was a great idea. You know, we'll have a part of the historical record be the arrest record, and this is the number of people who are on this side of the line on the left versus being on the safe other side of the line on the left, right? But I didn't know, you know, this is ignorance on my part, because I'm, I just didn't have the information under my belt about Parenti, about McKinney. even though they are far to the left of people like Michael Moore or people like who's this other jerk who wrote Lying Liars and that comedian, who's that guy? Anyway, you know, Amy Goodman, where, you know, even though they're to the left of those people, they were nowhere near as far left as I thought that they were. And when I brought up this idea, it was shot down right away. McKinney shot it down in terms of a fairly reasonable point, you know, that certain segments of society can't afford to get arrested so easily as other segments, you know. The arrest thing, I wasn't attached to the arrest business, you know, it could have been in any number of forms. The idea was to move in solidarity in some form on April 15, 16, and 17. Parenti shot it down. Oh, people, he said, this is amazing. I was shocked. Parenti said something to the effect that, oh, you know, Richard, you have to understand, people have jobs, they have this, they have that. All of the usual routine crap. Yeah, somebody's coming and saying a lot of people don't have jobs. It's true. It's part of the whole point of this thing, right? Saying, you know, you have to get, people are busy, in other words, right?
Yeah.
Well, I have news after the fact from Michael Parenti. And again, I love him so much about him, and I respect so much about him, and I was so dependent on so much that he's done. But I have news. When the house is on fire, and the house is on fire not just today for the home.
Eating with us.
We're talking with, your name is?
Oh, my name is Liberty Lana, and I live in Clearview Court number 32.
And you don't have rent control?
I do have rent control because
you
my ability...
Quote rent control, unquote.
Yeah, I have rent control from the city because my ability to read English and Spanish.
Right, but your rent control will end if you try to sell your place?
No, I lost all my equity. But I think this moment today is to talk to the city council members, to ask them to give us them a window to open the rent control before we sign the lease with Clearview Court, with Betty Swanson and the partners.
And when is your deadline for that?
If I believe it's in the end of April, and still we are dealing with the lease that the city council agreed to spend to give us some time to read the lease and make some notes. It's going to be much better for us than it is.
How many people were here from Clearview Court who were actually on rent control? Because I know the president, who I talked to before, and the former president, who were at the October meetings, didn't seem to be at this meeting. There's a large group of people who are not here, right?
Yes, a lot of people who are not here because we thought that this meeting was going to be at 7 and everybody was ready, including myself. And then they changed it at 3 o'clock.
They did the same thing to us a month ago.
And they did the same thing with Dianza. When Dianza was here, they changed it. So it's a tactic that they do. They don't care about us. They don't care. They care about what these ladies say about their own houses and their own things.
That's right.
One time talking to Scott Kennedy, I asked what I'm going to be, if those people can know, you know, they are going to be in the street because they cannot pay. The answer was, oh, you came to my house.
Yeah, he told us that night.
Maybe we ought to take him up on that.
Yes, let's go there.
We could do it tonight. I know where his house is, on King Street, is it not? Or maybe that's Rodkin's house.
I don't know what it is.
But I think that would be a perfect thing to go as a protest and just go in front of his house.
And I want to say something. I want to thank Ed Porter for all the goods that he's doing to us.
Tell me what he's doing.
He's helping us.
How
as much
that?
As he can.
Right.
But, you know, it's a lot of things that he can do. I hope that you have conscience, Corbett.
It's Corbett, right? C-O-R-B-E-T-T.
Corbett, talk to us here.
He doesn't want to talk, it looks like. He's waddling off, I'm afraid. Yeah, okay.
Well, at least I can tell him that, you know, if he has conscience. He came to us thinking that he was a big, nice guy, that he wants to play with our kids, and he said the rent that never is going to be up like in the answer, but it's happened.
But
it's
business happened. Is business.
Business. You know, greedy people are greedy people. But you know...
Godless council members.
You know, I told one of them, what comes around goes around, and who knows, his kids one day are going to be in the same situation that these kids are right now.
Unfortunately, it'll probably be a cold day in hell before they're in that situation because they got backing, you know. Anyway, you're invited to come on the air and expand on this.
My problem is I get so nervous, and my thing to do is to cry.
That's fine. So you can cry if you want. I got no objection to your crying. That's more eloquent than words.
I'm losing everything in my house. My plans was to sell my house in, you know, I'm 68. And I was planning in 5 years to sell my house and live with my son, just buy something around. They live in Reading, buy something there with them. Guess what? I cannot do it because all my equity is gone. And my case is not the worst. My case, you know, is like a maniac.
Are you likely to present a united front? Because, for example, you know, in 3 weeks, De Anza got together enough votes to turn things around. If you're prepared to go out and try to get a referendum to recall these council members or to change their policy decision with a referendum on whatever they decide, you know, I don't know. I can't say if the community would back you, but certainly some of us would.
They are so scared that the lawsuit from the big companies like Betty Swanson, they are so scared. They don't do anything good for the people that they say they represent us, and they don't. Because they represent the people who are rich, big companies, but not us. But they have the nerve to go and say to the President of the United States, impeach them, to us, to the people, impeach the President of the United States.
I think we know we should be impeached here.
And look what they are doing to us, to the people with kids.
We have the power of the recall. Keep that in mind. If you want to, if you know, I don't know.
I will work hard to keep these people out what they are. I'm going to work hard.
Well, you can file a recall petition tomorrow, you know, for these council members. You can actually start circulating.
I will do it, except for Ed Porter.
Except for Ed Porter. Well,
the rest of them,
I'll forgive you for that, much as I dislike him.
Well, he, you know, they are, in all the world people who are there, he is the one at least talking to us, trying to help somehow. You know, the little things that he can do. At least he's doing it. At least he's doing it.
Let me ask you this. Are you having any... What can people do who want to help Clearview Court? I mean, what can a member of the community who's hearing this on the radio do? Like, you know, an ordinary person who hears, I don't like this, I think this is outrageous. What do you suggest? Can they come to a meeting?
Write letters to the Sentinel, even that we wrote letters to the Sentinel.
Write to the Sentinel.
And they don't print it.
They don't even print it.
They don't print it.
Well, naturally not. It's probably bad for business.
Tell me what we can do. We are at university. I'm going tomorrow at university to send them, to give them to everybody. Go to the street. We are going everywhere. So if you know somebody who can help us.
Taco Bell March and Mission Street, 3 o'clock on Friday. It's a march from Taco Bell on Mission down to Taco Bell on Pacific Avenue around wages. There's going to be a number of student of activists there. I suggest you go to that.
Okay.
It's on Friday. I believe at 3 o'clock at the Taco Bell on Mission, and then they're going to march down to the Taco Bell on Pacific Avenue.
I'm going to try to be there.
Is there a legal fund that people can contribute money to yet?
Legal fund? We are doing it. But, you know, we have a lady who gave us the other day $25. Mm-hmm. Those people are doing...
But is there an address we can send money to?
No, yeah, to Clearview Court.
What's the address?
Well... Let's see, it's Claire, 1700 West Cliff, number one. This is, number one, Clearview Court.
Get that number, get that address again.
It's 1700 West Cliff.
1700 West Cliff.
West Cliff. 1700 West Cliff. Number one.
And who should it be addressed to?
Anita Webb.
W-E-B?
Yeah, W-E-B-B.
Two Bs. And is there a phone number people can call if they want to get involved?
Oh, yes, my number.
You want to give out that number on the air?
It's 457-1261, 457-1261.
And should the check be made out to, do you have?
To the Homeowners Association.
Okay.
It's CCH.
H-A.
Okay.
CC?
Clearview, I'm making this up. Is it Clearview Homeowners Association?
Clearview Homeowners Association, that's what it is.
Do you have legal counsel?
We do. We have one of the best.
What's his or her name?
The guy is wonderful. His name is Dwight Hurt, and he is working half, he is charging only half of his
time.
Hopefully. Former county council, do I hear?
But he's good. He's giving us all the in and outs. And he, like I say, if it's $3,000, he's working only for $1,500. He's good.
Well, I hope to see you tomorrow at 5:50. I mean, not tomorrow, Thursday at 5:50, if you want to be on the air.
Yeah, I will.
And bring some people along if you want.
I will. Can I bring some of the Spanish-speaking people?
Sure, definitely.
Okay,
it's about 6 o'clock on Tuesday evening. We're talking with
Matthew Vandeveer.
And Matthew, we're standing here in front of a squad car, and you've had some problems recently with your blankets being taken.
Yeah, twice. First time was about 3-4 days ago. Our friend was attending our stuff, actually, for us to go to the bathroom. And they took our blankets and did not give them back. We asked for them for a couple of days. My wife can't walk down to the property room, and they won't give them to me. So
your wife is pregnant, right?
Yeah, 7.5 months, high-risk pregnancy. And then to the day, Officer Seeley took our blankets again and will not give our blankets back.
And what was that? Are these cocaine-covered blankets? Or what's the reason Officer Seeley is giving for doing this?
He's just taking our blankets to harass us, trying to get us out of town or whatnot. I don't know. Pretty much, he's just endangering the safety of my wife, and, you know.
He's not on here.
He's been rousting everybody all day.
I'm telling you,
undercover.
I think he went home at 5:30. Call the general information of the police department.
No.
I write down the number for you.
That's
you
bull
can
crap.
Call and you can ask for
tonight, we sleep on the streets. Not any other day. Every other day, too.
All you have to do is go make a phone call and you can request a talk to him.
Yeah, requesting to talk to him isn't going to do anything. But quite honestly, have my 7.5-month pregnant wife without no blanket.
I don't know what happened to your blanket.
You don't know what happened to my blanket, but I did see there was undercover busting people at the drop-in center. We were sitting there trying to relax for a day of high strungness with you guys harassing us all fucking day.
Who's been harassing
you? Gallegos, Rodriguez,
okay,
all of them. Pushed my wife the other day too, god damn it. I'm fucking tired of you guys fucking harassment.
I don't know why you're talking like this to me.
Because I'm sick and tired of the fucking police around here.
Never done anything to you.
Oh, yeah, right. You're harassing me. Walk 3 blocks, which is even supposed to be against the goddamn law to write a ticket on a person who walks 3 blocks.
So what did CSO Williams do that you feel is harassing? You just had an interchange with him, Matthew. Tell us what happened.
He won't fucking get a hold of the officers that are actually on duty right now working undercover on drug busts. But yeah, they're on drug busts rousting the homeless people. Eric Slee doesn't fucking do drug busts. He honestly harasses the homeless people that sit out here trying to get away from them all day.
Now tell me, you say earlier today you had a blanket problem?
Yeah, all of our blankets got taken by Officer Seeley.
What time was this, more or less?
This is about 3:30.
And where was it?
No, the drop-in center. We were trying to relax. It was open hours, but the ladies let my wife and me stay there because she's 7.5 months pregnant. They let her stay on the couches and stuff.
And what happened?
Her stuff was set by the door, and we come up to go pick it up, and she was doing a bust on a person that didn't even have anything on him. And he took that person, our stuff, thinking it was that person's, and we told him that's not his stuff, that's ours. And he still walked away with our bedding. And he walked away with nothing else, just our bedding.
This was indoors or outdoors?
Indoors.
And this was, he was undercover at the time?
Yes, he was, with 3 other officers. I don't know their name.
And you specifically told him that you're taking the bedding of my pregnant wife, but he didn't bother to stop.
He was too busy trying to bust the other person.
And what were they busting that person for?
Conspiracy to sell, which they didn't have anything on them.
And what were the conspiracy to sell? Heroin, cocaine, marijuana?
Probably shards and fucking marijuana.
Now, you say that you had another incident some days before?
Yeah, about 3 days ago, where I got that taken also.
And
other bedding. 2 other extra blankets after this one that was just given to us yesterday.
You want to talk to this officer?
Can you do anything and help me? Because I know Seeley's on duty right now.
About what?
About him taking our bedding, which we have no bedding for night to sleep with. Again.
When did he take it?
About an hour ago, and I've been trying to get a hold of you guys since. My wife even came down here earlier to try to get a hold of you guys to get it. And nobody seems to be wanting to do anything about it.
Well, if he has it, he might have put this in the public.
Well, you know, considering he's doing a lot of undercover work on drug busts right now, who knows? Especially Gallego and him. I just want our bedding back. We have no bedding. We're sleeping outside tonight.
I don't know exactly.
Well, then can you provide extra bedding for us then? Because we have no bedding. We have no blankets. You guys have nothing. You have nothing. So that's putting a child in danger. You know, that's child endangerment. grievance, harassment. What? Fuck you, bitch.
Matthew, don't take off. Matthew, wait. Well, we got our drives away from in front of the Delmar. Looks like we have a witness to this whole thing. Sinan, what do you think of all this? No, he doesn't want to be identified. Forget I mentioned that. He's not involved. He's somewhere else. Come on. You heard the whole thing. What do you think?
No comment.
Well, there you have it.
Sounds terrible. How could they take betting without any conviction and not return it? There's a pregnant mother. It's absolutely outrageous.
It's the same couple that was before city council that Rotkin called the guy a liar, and they were apparently expelled from the homeless service center. They got I got one night in a motel, because of the public fuss that they made on the evening when we were reading the names of the homeless dead to city council. But he was arrested here yesterday. Actually, he was subdued after he had. He's a apparently a epileptic. He had an epileptic seizure in this area about this time yesterday. Matthew did. What I heard from his wife Nikki. But it doesn't sound good. If his account of events is accurate and complete, then
doesn't sound good.
Doesn't sound good. So we're talking with
Joe Pace.
And Joe, you saw this sort of conversation I was having with Matthew, and it kind of brought to mind an incident you saw about half a year ago, which you found, should we say, amusing and telling?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they had half the Santa Cruz police down here. They had the SPCA. They had the sheriff's department because the police had found a puppy.
A puppy?
A puppy. In the sleeping bag. And the police came along and said, oh, we saw you put that puppy in the sleeping bag.
Who put the puppy in the sleeping bag?
Yeah, this young girl had hid the puppy in her sleeping bag.
Oh, boy, that sounds suspicious to me.
Yeah. So they pulled up and they said, we saw you put the puppy in the sleeping bag. Let's see the puppy. So they brought the puppy out. They called SPCA. They had the sheriff's department. There was about six cop cars down here on the mall blocking traffic for about an hour because of this puppy.
And this was, where did this incident happen?
Right here.
In front of the Del Mar Theater?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And
what did the woman have to say about it?
Oh, well, she was upset, you know, that she wanted her puppy back. So they confiscated the puppy.
Why did they confiscate the puppy and not just cite her and tell her to leave the mall with the... What was the charge?
Well, the charge, I guess, there was no
animal
charge.
Cruelty? Or?
No, there was no charge. There was no citation. They were just holding the puppy in detention.
Protective custody.
Right.
Maybe the puppy was a witness, probably.
Right. And meanwhile, the puppy's looking very scared. You know, it's this little tiny 2-pound puppy. He's looking
he probably loved everything.
Where's my future going to be? Am I going to the pound or what? He looked very scared. So my friend walks up to the police officer and says, I want my puppy back. I want my puppy back. That's my puppy. And the police officer says, is this your puppy? And he goes, yeah, I want my puppy back. So he goes, okay, gives him the puppy back. So I walked up to my friend and I go, is that really your puppy? And he goes, no.
Did she ever get her puppy back?
Yes.
So he gave
her the puppy back.
So some narrow-minded individuals or some, you know, progressive ideologues might call this a case of sexism. But clearly, the man who asked for the puppy obviously had a winning way about him.
Yeah. I mean, he was crying. He was very dramatic, you know.
Right.
He cried, I want my puppy back. I want my puppy back. And convinced the guy that it was his puppy.
Was the woman watching this?
The whole time.
Now, didn't she object, that's not your puppy?
No.
She was in on it, in cahoots.
Or scared that she was going to get arrested, too,
for stealing a puppy.
For puppy ownership.
Puppy, puppy napping.
Puppy on the mall.
Puppy napping, or was it a puppy napping?
Puppy napping.
That's a good question. I don't know what the story is.
But when you think about, you know, you got drugs, you got terror, and you got drugs linked to terror.
And then you have betting theft. That's another problem
right.
That comes up here.
Sleeping, standing. I mean, all these horrendous
playing
crimes.
Playing the music in front of the theater. I mean,
playing music.
Look at this guy. Actually, he's playing in a legal place, but I...
Meanwhile, nobody's caught the anthrax killer.
Right, and Bush is still unimpeached. We're waiting for that asshole to get impeached.
Bush is on the loose, and I'm told that...
And Democratic hacks are running or aren't worth a shit.
Bush is the biggest criminal in the United States, and the 9/11 is the biggest crime scene, the biggest unsolved crime scene in America.
And here you have it, the truth from the streets of Santa Cruz. We've been talking with
Joe Pace.
Thanks, Joe. Now for all you environmentalists out here, a supporter of the notorious Pat Kittle on the streets here. We're talking with...
This is Ray. And, you know, I don't know who Pat Kittle is. Never met him before. Name isn't even familiar. But I did hear your exchange on the radio, and he was talking about the damage that lots of homeless people have done up in the Poganip and up in the hills above Santa Cruz. And as somebody who's also homeless and who also likes to spend some time in the Poganip, you know, I have to tell you, when I'm up there, I'm appalled at what I see homeless bums doing in the Poganip. They're tearing it up. They're trashing it out. And, you know, personally... I'd like to see them sleep somewhere else. I know they don't have any other place for them to sleep, but I also know that myself, even if I don't have another place to sleep, when I leave the Poganip, it looks exactly as it did before I even showed up. And I always like to pack out some kind of trash anyway, because I think, you know, why not? It's a beautiful place. We should keep it that way. And from what I gathered from that, you know, I have to feel the same way, that, you know, not only those bums up there that are trashing the forest, but, you know, also the logging industries and also the rest of them. I say to hell with all of them. If they can't have respect for themselves, if they can't have respect for their environment, then I think they should perish along the wayside.
The candid voice of... at least one individual in Santa Cruz, Uncle Ray, who is also known for his harsh words about that business across the street. They were both looking at...
Oh, yeah, Pacific Trading Company, a boycott Pacific Trading Company. Look at all the love that they have in their window. What do you think about that?
In a display, for those who can't see it, with the word love is repeated at least 8 times, maybe 12. And, of course, there are a series of mannequins with dress displays. They are headless mannequins. Perhaps that's symbolic.
Perhaps it is. You know, I know one thing. They don't have any love for me, and they damn sure don't have any love for you, Robert.
That's probably quite true. In fact, you have been, should we say, barred from the Pacific Trading Company?
Oh, yeah. They won't let me in there because they know I associate with you.
Guilt by association. I thought that went out with the late, great Senator Joseph McCarthy.
Oh, no. McCarthyism is back alive and well, better than it ever has been. And there are certain people around town who, if you associate with them, they're going to keep their eye on you.
Well, thank you very much, Ray. Anything you want to add?
Oh, no. Just keep up the good work, Robert.
Will do. A few more words for Uncle Ray.
Oh, yeah, and just talking about the downtown situation and, you know, the whole thing with parking. I mean, I don't drive a car anymore. I gave up my car because I just can't feel good about it in a time of war. But my clients drive cars, and they come to see me to get their hair done, and they park in front of my shop. And if they're, like, 1 minute too late, you know, here comes some bitch or some asshole to give them a ticket for $20. You know, now, of course, you have to have a permit to park in front of your own house. And to park in front of your own house on public property, you need to pay for this. This is extortion. This is the same as the bully in seventh grade who stole your lunch money. And yet these people show up every day, and they pay for their parking permit with a smile on their face, and they say please, and they say thank you for the extortion. I just wonder when enough is going to be enough, and the people are going to say, you know, damn it, this is my town. I'm going to do what I want in public space, as long as I'm respecting myself, and I'm respecting others, and respecting the environment that we're sharing together. Ethical anarchy.
Well, you know, I've often asked myself the same question. And you, of course, pointed out that we've known each other for 2 years. And what the hell good is all this protesting done, all these taped interviews? Isn't that what you're saying?
Well, you know, I find it damn entertaining. And it also feels good to be able to throw some of this energy out there. But as far as what good it's done, I haven't seen anything positive come from pretty much any of the things that we've stood for. In fact, I see, you know, less and less people standing, and I see the steamrolling of fascist politics just going right through Santa Cruz like, you know, shit out of a goose.
A gloomy assessment, but perhaps a true one. Thank you, Ray.
Thank you, Robert.
What are you waiting for, Ray?
I'm waiting for the revolution. I'm waiting for, eventually, it's going to get so bad. I mean, that I'm thinking about the young kids coming up. They're going to come up and they're going to say, what happened to my job? What happened to my little piece of the pie in Santa Cruz that my grandparents and my grandparents' grandparents had, but me, I can't afford it because some rich kid from out of state, from out of country, has moved into my neighborhood, and now I'm sleeping in the Poganip or someplace like that.
Trashing them. Maybe not trashing them.
Well, if you're a local, I don't think locals really go up there to trash it. They kind of, you know... enjoy it from their youth. But, I mean, you know, I think that revolution is coming. I think it's right around the corner. And, I mean, you know, Dennis Kucinich is a loser. Like I said, when the first time he even threw his hat into the race, he's already lost. I still see people with his buttons. What the hell is that? And Kerry, come on, Kerry is a skull and bones man, just like Bush. They're old friends from the old school. They're going to do the same thing. If they don't, if Bush doesn't steal the election like he did the first time, which I think he will do, I can't see any other thing other than us having another 4 years of Bush, another 4 years of tyranny, and I think something's bound to break, and I hope it breaks here, and I hope Santa Cruz starts the revolution. I want to see it start here. In fact, sometimes I actually think about how nice it would be to have an 81-millimeter mortar, because I could sit in the Poconkeep and I could hit both the city building, city hall, the police station, and the boardwalk just for the hell of it.
This all, of course, is a hypothetical analysis.
Totally hypothetical analysis. I'm a pacifist.
There you are. But think on it. We're talking with Jolly Jessica here. It's about 6:30, and you're sitting, well, adjacent to the one of the last pieces of undeveloped lot property, the Rittenhouse Hole fence, where you can actually legally sit down within 14 feet. If we're, of course, on the other side of the street, you have to be 14 feet away from a building, 14 feet away from a sidewalk cafe, 10 feet away from a sidewalk. No, I guess, well, you have to be in the, now 5% of the sidewalk that's left to people who are seated. And Jessica, you have a sign with you that invites people to donate, correct?
Yes, I do.
But on this occasion, and night has fallen, you don't. Why is that?
Because technically we're not supposed to be panhandling after dark.
So you're just sitting here kind of enjoying the evening, or you are, shall we say, surreptitiously seeking funds?
Both A and B.
I see. So in fact, you are sneakily violating the law.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, you know it is illegal to sit down with a sign during the day.
No, it's not.
If you're panhandling, it is.
Are you serious?
I will show you the code section. What else have you got to say about this situation, Jessica?
Well, you know, they did, like I've said numerous times over the last 2.5 years, it's selective enforcement.
Yeah, I mean, here you are, actually illegal to, it's illegal to panhandle even during the day, even silently with a sign, if you are seated. It's the craziest law I've ever seen, because presumably they want panhandlers to be more discreet, and that if you're seated, it's more discreet. But actually, it has nothing to do with discretion. It has to do with getting rid of people who are panhandling. Any final thoughts before I go off and rhapsodize myself?
Nope.
And there you have it. And you're tuned to Free Radio 96.3, 101.1 FM. And also www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse. In the studio with me, a surprise guest or visitor is Jerry Henry, a man who feeds people and has been fighting for the civil rights of himself, and in so doing, fighting for the civil rights of the rest of us. Hey, Jerry, how you doing?
Oh, pretty good, Robert. I'm a little bit in spin today, just a lot of stuff going on. I just was over by Pastor's Feed over at the Loudon Nelson Center.
That's the Potter's Hand, which I thought had closed down, but I'm glad to hear it's still going. He had told me last week that they were closing up because Loudon Nelson was closing on Sundays, but apparently that hasn't happened yet. So for those of you who are hungry, sounds like 11 o'clock, there's this usual tasty meal at the Loudon Nelson Center. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, last week they had a sign over at Loudon Nelson saying the last day was going to be the 13th. That Loudon Nelson was open on Sundays.
So there is a last day coming up, unfortunately. Yeah, go ahead.
Sounds like it. I just heard that caller about the Poconkeep, you know, and you know, it took me back to the day, and, you know, not that I'm not, you know, a naturalist, but I think when you take environmentalism and take it to the point where human beings can just fall over dead, that's a bit of a trip. It takes me back to the days of Farmer's Market and Old Hippie Corner, when they took out the garbage cans so that they could arrest people for littering. And we experienced some of that in Abtas this week. It's,
tell me about it.
You know, I called Ellen Perry's office. I was talking to Robin.
That's Supervisor Ellen Perry?
Yeah. And Lieutenant Hartness is down there. And I mean, it's, you know, the guy's just been running our famous county jail here for the last 3-4 years, and he's back out on the street now.
He's a deputy sheriff.
Yeah, he's Lieutenant Hartness. I think the homeless in Abtas call him Heartless.
Why would they possibly say such a thing, Jerry?
Well, he's that same guy that said he wanted to take me out in the mountains and tried to tow my truck a few times. And I had a rough encounter with him down at the courthouse just a few weeks ago. I haven't been able to get Eternal Affairs to call back, but it was like he walked up to me and said, come on, we haven't done this in a long time. Turn it on, turn it on. And he was talking about my tape recorder. And I turned it around and I said, well, I don't have to. I don't come in this building without it running. I'm still carrying, you know, two tape recorders. I got one in each pocket.
Some people carry six guns, but we reporters and those of us who occasionally have gotten attention from the police carry tape recorders.
Well, it's the only way I've been tried to keep a little bit safe. But, you know, he looked at me and he said, well, that's a bit paranoid. And I said, no, not really. When you've been threatened and you're threatened to tow my truck. And he just starts laughing. And it's he's one real sick pup, as far as I can figure. Well, he's in Abtos at the park, you know, and I'm sitting up there talking to one of the guys that we just filed for a jury trial with, because no homeless in Abtos can shop for groceries. They just, you know, this is a whole, you know, I guess Abtos is a pretty good story in itself. He was just shopping in Safeway with his food stamps, and
this is the fellow who's going to trial.
Yeah, this is the guy that's going to trial, and you know, that's the guy that's born and raised in Abtos. I mean, he goes to Abtos, you know, he's lived in Abtos all his life, and they just walk up to him and arrest him for trespass, and he hadn't done nothing. He's never had a theft ticket. He's never, you know, I think he's been arrested a number of times for drunk in public, especially since they passed that nice social cleansing law, you know, drinking in public. So they chased the guys into the bushes. And
Was he intoxicated when they approached him in Safeway?
Well, I don't believe so. You know, Larry's the type of guy that town couldn't ask for a nicer town drunk. You know, he's just one of those kind of guys. He may have a drinking problem and thing, but you've never seen him a problem unless you consider passing out in the bushes might be a problem. But to me, that's no problem, because Larry just ain't a problem. You know, he's kind of like that drunk that was on Andy, if you remember that old show, what was it, Mayberry RFD. And they had the town drunk that just walked in and let himself in the jail. And they didn't even lock the door because, you know, he just needed a place to sleep. Well, that's kind of Larry, you know. I think a whole lot of people in Abtos feel that way about Larry.
Unlike in Hollywood and Santa Cruz and in Abtos, there is no place to sleep for the overwhelming majority of people outside. And if they try to make their own places to sleep, often they get harassed and find their possessions being confiscated and so forth.
Well, to go on with the story, I'm walking up to the park and you know, there's some squad cars there, and here's Lieutenant Hartness, you know, I've just cleared the area. You know, there's been drinking and littering, and you're going to have to leave, you know.
Was it because you were drunk or you were a piece of litter? What was the story?
I think it's still just a nigger Jew bastard thing. You know, I'm just not quite acceptable to the little town of Abtos. Craptos is what I call it. Craptos by the sea. And we, you know, although I love Abtos, I dearly wish and dearly hope we can restore a little bit of what has made our village great. You know, in times past.
Wait a minute. Lieutenant Hartness told you that you couldn't be in the park because he was clearing the park of litterers and drunks?
Yeah, that's what I was talking to Robin, because over, you know, the last 8 months or so, I've been dealing with Robin, and we've got to know each other. Ellen Perry's assistant.
Ah, I see.
And I asked her, I said, you know, is that what you would expect if you had walked up, if you were walking down to the park? Or is that what Ellen Perry did? And she says, oh, no. You know, and I think that's true with about 80% probably of the citizens, or 90% of the citizens in Abtos, that probably nothing would have been said to them. But lo and behold, that day I wasn't welcome at the park. But Lieutenant Hartless had just, you know, just made it clear that he had cleared the area. And it's littering and drinking. And to go back to the environmental guy, you know, I see these guys in the bushes because not because that's where they want to be. I don't think a whole lot of people are in the Poconup because that's where they want to be. I think they've been exiled by the society and chased from areas. You know, you've seen it, and I've, you know, It's like the puppy tape and Seeley chasing people downtown here. Where do you expect these people to go? I mean, they're not there because they want to trash the Poconup. And I think it's a real dangerous viewpoint when you take the environmental... The environmental things where the basic human right to exist is eliminated through worrying about, you know, Mother Nature. I think Mother... We take care of our own. If we took care of these people, you know, Mother Nature would be just fine, be a whole lot better off. You know, the whole complete realm, because I think those people are part of nature. But that's my babbling for today, Robert.
It's good babbling, and interesting babbling as usual, Jerry. I know that you recently won a court victory of a sort, certainly getting from the federal courts a little satisfaction that you have not been able to get from the state courts, though certainly the battle is far from over. You want to give us an update on that?
No, I really didn't come to by here to talk about that.
I've mentioned on the air before, but, you know... I'm pleased that the federal court has taken an interest in saying, you know, looking at the prosecutions of you, the $100,000 bail for so-called trespass with intent to interfere with the business at Gottschalk's and the coffee roasting company in the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center. And, of course, your recent concern that, I guess that they're not considering this, but it's a concern of yours, that that Adult Protective Services and other authorities like the district attorney have been urged by Sergeant Christie, a deputy with the Sheriff's Office at the Rancho Del Mar, who is also featured, by the way, you may not have noticed.
I noticed.
In the Good Times.
Yeah.
As the, you know, for...
I wouldn't mind talking about that just a little bit.
Oh, okay. Well, she's, of course, she went after you and your colleague, Scott Rhodes, your assistant, your aide, you might say, articulate man who's written some interesting stuff, which I guess you can get on the Green Party Press website about your case. For those who are interested in... getting more information about Jerry Henry, I've written some stuff, and Scott Rhodes, the man I'm talking about, has written some stuff. You can go to www, I think it's .greenpress.org, but I'm not sure. Look, Google for Green Press if you want to get information. But go ahead, Jerry, you want to talk a bit about Sergeant Christie and this, I guess, the Good Times' announcement that it's sort of a very favorable article, not identifying her as a deputy sheriff, but as a county employee, picturing her and her partner, who she had, I guess they got married up in San Francisco under a Newsom's determination to allow gays the same rights that heterosexuals have.
Well, again, I was up in Robin's office. That's where I found up in Ellen Perry's aide. She told me that Christie got married up in the city, and I think my response to that was, And I had no problems with her getting married, but I said, isn't it really a shame that the homos have gone hobophobe? And she kind of looked at me a little bit strange, and then she looked at me and she says, they have. And let me go on, Robert. And then I said, isn't it really a shame somebody seeking that kind of tolerance is that intolerant? And... isn't it really sad that here's a lady that just not very, very long before, when they were coming after Scott that day, for buying a cup of coffee or trying to buy a cup of coffee for me, making the statement, I'm sick and tired of cute cliches like access for the disabled. And I mean, well, I have no problems with her getting married, but, it's really sad.
It's ironic,
intolerance,
you know?
Yeah.
It's very ironic, and in a way, it's kind of ominous because, well, I was talking to my producer yesterday, and she was telling me that she had been speaking to the Coalition on Homelessness, Chance Martin, who writes Street Sheet, and not Street Spirit, the one that you often see around town, but the Street Sheet, which is sold in San Francisco, a homeless newspaper. And Chance was kind of, as I understand by Becky Johnson's account, noting the kind of unhealthy and unholy collusion there is between yuppie gays and conservative politicians like Newsom, who, while he's out front on the issue, and properly so, of gay marriage, is also cobbled together some of the most reactionary stuff regarding homeless people in San Francisco.
Yeah. I had something on my brain, but it kind of slipped just now. Let me try and get it back. I was going to one parting thing. I and Robin and I talked about this when we were up there talking about this intolerance. I said, you know, President Clinton, one of the last questions I remember that really stirred me right before he left office was asked a question, what he felt the largest threat facing America was today. And his response wasn't terrorism, it wasn't drugs, it wasn't crime. He said that the greatest thing he saw facing America today was intolerance. I think that's what our city's throwing out. You know, we were world famous for being a place of tolerance. That's what made Santa Cruz one of the most famous little towns in the world. And now to see it go so intolerant is so sad.
Well, I've always think that's been sort of an illusion. By the way, I ran across one of your old pals the other day, Colleen Crosby, the owner of the coffee roasting companies, both here in Santa Cruz and in Aptos.
Yeah, that fair trade lady.
The fair trade coffee woman.
Yeah.
Who is, we're very friendly towards each other, and you've always, you know, held me to account for that and wondered why I even patronize her stores, given the treatment she gave you. And,
well, it's not just me, Robert.
And
no.
Others. And others.
No, it's when she hires that hose out in front of her store pre-earthquake, wet down the sidewalk, you know, any undesirables are around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just gnawed at my soul. It's one of the first acts of social cleansing I see in this town. And it's, you know, there's a reason why I call her the rich, deadhead, caffeine guru, a slammer cruise. You know, and it's sad. It's sad that the homos have gone hobophobe. It's,
she was in the company of a man. I don't know if she's...
Well, You know, I'm talking about, you know, people seeking tolerance. She declares to be seeking tolerance and all this.
Right, she apparently just returned from some trip to... it was a foreign country. I'm trying to remember. Was it Turkey? Was it Iraq? It was some foreign country. I apologize for not remembering it. She did say, I told her that, you know, that you were concerned about her discriminatory policies or the policies of her staff, discriminatory, whatever they were, whoever was doing the discriminating. And she told me she would commit herself to meeting with you and working these issues out. And I told her that if she did, she would have to listen to some pretty strong concerns. And I also couldn't speak for you. I wouldn't know if you would be willing to sit down and talk with her. What do you think?
Yeah, I have no idea, and I'm not really here to talk about the case. Me, you know. I was more just here to speak about intolerance, you know, and just my feelings, my, you know, when I heard that call over there when I said in that part, it just made my soul hurt, you know, because I think you have to take into account what makes all these people be in the bushes in this great little slammer cruise of ours, as I call it. You know, and I think they're just trying to escape the slammer a little bit. I think there's got to be better alternatives than mounting a police state, you know, because of our intolerance.
I think a lot of people agree with you.
Signing off.
Hey, thank you, Jerry Henry. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz with a unique and exclusive interview with that elusive Jerry Henry. So here's a little music now from Ann Feeney, and then we're going to continue with Bathrop Spears Broadside. Should you want to call in, I remind you the number is 427-3772.
Why God invented whiskey? To make sure the Irish didn't take over. So this is a true Irish story. Pat and Mick are on the boat on their way over to the United States. And Pat says to Mick, "Well, Mick, have you got employment when you get to the United States?" "Oh, indeed I have," he says. "Me brother's got me a fine job in the building trades." "Oh, the building trade," says Pat. "Don't you know that's dirty, dangerous work? You'll be taking your life in your hands." Mick says to Pat, "Well, Mr. Fancy Pants, what sort of employment have you secured for yourself in the United States?" "Oh, it's all been explained to me," says Pat. Me Uncle William tells me the streets in the United States is paved with gold. I intend to support myself by picking up the gold I find in the streets. Ah, you're daft, says Mick. You'll be carrying a hod like me soon enough. But don't you know they go through customs at Ellis Island? Their first day on American soil, they set foot on Manhattan Island, and there right in front of them on the street was a $20 gold piece. Pat elbows Mick. There now, don't you see me uncle was right? The streets is paved with gold, just like he said. And he saunters right on past the coin. Mick says, well, aren't you going to pick it up, man? He says, you forget yourself. This is Sunday. I'll start work tomorrow. Well, as you might guess, he ended up carrying a hod sooner than later. And this is purportedly a true story. It's called The Sick Note. Dear boss, I write this note to you to tell you of my plight. And at the time of writing, I am not a pretty sight. My body is all black and blue, my face a deathly gray. And I write this note to say why Paddy's not at work today. Whilst working on the 14th floor, some bricks I had to clear. To throw them down from such a height was not a good idea. But then my foreman came along the bloody awkward sod, and he said I'd have to cart them down the ladder in me hod. Well, clearing all those bricks by hand, it seemed so very slow, that I hoisted up a barrel and secured the rope below. But in my haste to do the job, I was too dense to see that a barrel full of building bricks was heavier than me. And so when I untied the rope, the barrel fell like lead, and clinging tightly to the rope, I started up instead. I shot up like a rocket when, to my dismay, I found that halfway up I met that bloody barrel coming down. The barrel broke my collarbone as to the ground it sped. And when I reached the top, I banged the pulley with my head. Still clinging tightly, numb with shock from this almighty blow. When the barrel spilled out half its bricks, 14 floors below. Now when those bricks had fallen from the barrel to the floor, I then outweighed the barrel, so I started down once more. Still clinging tightly to the rope, my body racked with pain, and halfway down I met that bloody barrel once again. The force of this collision halfway up the office block caused multiple operations.